fly safety, sir.
This entire mission is a serious misallocation of valuable military resources.
Because I was inverted.
All right, everyone, the red light is on and we're recording. This is Mark back from another episode of the Veteran Semi-Professional. So today's an interview episode where I'm interviewing a veteran about their life and career after the military, all in an effort to help you if you're trying to figure out what am I going to do once I can put my hands back in my pockets, grow out my hair, and start wearing these things called quote-unquote civilian clothes. This is a show for you. So I bring people on. We talk about their post-military life, the path they took, all in an effort to help you and your family be more comfortable about making that decision and that jump into civilian life and planning out your first, you know, 3, 5, 10 years of life after the uniform. Okay. I should make a small amendment to my typical intro as well, because I just saw that the Navy now authorized hands in pockets. So I'll have to reword that just a tiny bit, but for now that's what we're going with. So super pumped for today's guest, super successful guy. Has a lot of experience, you know, post-military for us to dig into today. So super pumped. So Jim, if you can take a minute and introduce yourself, I'd appreciate it.
Yeah, my name's Jim Murphy, James Murphy. Most people call me Murph. I'm an Air Force veteran. Came up through the Guard program as a fighter pilot. I flew the F-15 for both the Georgia and the Florida Guard. Like many of us, when we were veterans, saw, wow, how in the world was I able to get to where I am doing the particular role or job I'm doing in the military in such a short amount of time in a standardized way with a lot of alignment, cadence, execution rhythm, et cetera. And that made a huge impression on me. So decided to turn that into a business model. So I've spent the last 25 to 30 years teaching companies how to align and plan and execute like we did as an afterthought in the military. I'm currently the managing director, partner, / CEO of a private equity firm. I've been a lifelong entrepreneur as well as a veteran and a pilot.
Awesome. Yeah, I got a lot we're going to be able to dig into with that background, everything. So first, you know, you mentioned you were a pilot. What was your transition from the Air Force like? Kind of good, bad, ugly, and sideways. And I know, you know, you were in the Air Guard. So some of that, you know, you probably had a civilian job going on at the same time. But I know even for, you know, the guards and reservists, there's still that transition journey that kind of everyone goes through. Can you just talk us through that a little bit?
Yeah, absolutely. Well, I flew the F-15 in the Guard. So most of my time in the Guard, I was actually full-time or active duty. Right. So I was a technician or active duty. So much like many of your listeners, I felt like I was full-time active duty. Now, there were periods of time where I took some outside employment, but for me, my transition was really, really unique in the fact that I grew up on a farm in central Kentucky, was an athlete, went to college on a baseball scholarship, thought I'd be a professional athlete, had to, you know, drag myself back to my little town in central Kentucky and look everybody in the eye and let them know I didn't have what it took to go to the next level. So went out and got a real job and started selling copiers door to door to small rural companies throughout Kentuckiana, if you will, learned a lot about prospecting, cold calling, and the language of business. So I had that before I even got into the military, which is very unique to me. Then I met a fighter pilot who made a huge impression on me, decided to look into seeing how I could get into the Air Force, Navy, or the Marines and fly. This movie Top Gun came out. Maybe some of you heard of it. That motivated me even some more. And I was lucky enough to get selected in the Georgia Air National Guard to go to pilot training and fly the F-15. But what happened to me is when I was at RTU at Luke Air Force Base learning to fly the F-15, I went to solo the jet for the first time. And as I'm climbing up the ladder, crew chief's helping me strap in, I'm getting ready to pull the JFS handle, I had an epiphany and I said, how does a normal dude like me from Shelby County, Kentucky, get here in this single seat, military jet fighter, supersonic, fire-breathing F-15 in 16 months? And how'd they get me to do this? And I just had that epiphany. Maybe some of you have as well. And I realized that I went through a series of simple frameworks. And these frameworks produced a highly dedicated, aligned team of professionals. In my case, fighter pilots and the crew that worked in and around our jets with an unwavering outcome for a mission objective or mission success. And that made a huge impression on me. And I decided, you know, if I would have utilized some of those frameworks when I was an athlete or selling copiers, I would have been immensely successful. And I also realized we all work for the DOD or the US government, one of the most inefficient enterprises on the planet. So how in the world can we find these pockets of extreme excellence? So there were a lot of similarities that I saw that were happening in large enterprises, i.e. companies in corporate America. So I vowed on that night when I soloed the F-15 to create a company to help other companies, teams, or organizations and individuals utilize these frameworks to accelerate their performance in order to win in whatever they're doing. And that's kind of what I've spent most of my life doing. It's enabled me to be all over the world. We train in 26 countries, put 2.5 million people through our programs and our services. You know, I've had a chance to spend a lot of time with top CEOs we've all read about and know, worked with 14 NFL teams, helped to get to the Super Bowl. So just had some really, really cool experiences. But over that time, too, I also realized the value of the frameworks in the company that I built, which was called Afterburner. There was more, too. So we started helping veterans in their transition, as you know, Mark, and then created a private equity firm where we decided, hey, we're going to turn this inside, find our own portfolio of companies, utilize flawless execution and veteran experts that we've brought up through our consulting ranks to help grow our own businesses within our own portfolio. And that was kind of the thought process behind starting into private equity.
Oh, I love that pivot. I definitely want to dig into that a little bit later. And as we were talking before the show, I said my dad grew up in Kentucky. He also grew up in a small farm in northern Kentucky in Pendleton County, just south of Cincinnati, if you know where that is. And fun, I've had that same thought many a time of, I remember, you know, being strapped in a C-130 with, you know, 120 pounds of kit on me, about to jump out of a plane in the middle of the night, and just looking around at the guy on the left of me, right of me, like, what were the series of life decisions that led me to this point right now? You know, a couple of years ago, I was just a kid in college or a kid in high school, whatever. And then somehow I'm here right now. Like, amazing to just kind of how quickly that happens. And so I want to dig into that epiphany moment for you a little bit of, did you have any intuition at the time of maybe what some of those frameworks that it sounded like, you know, you later developed into, you know, this business, but did you have an idea at the time of what were those frameworks that turned, you know, Jim into this pilot within that 18-month period?
Absolutely. I saw all kinds of patterns, right? Frameworks are patterns. And, you know, one thing I realized in the military is simplicity beats complexity. Even though flying the F-15 is highly complex, learning to fly it was a step-by-step cookie cutter approach. And almost everything we did in the military, we learned in threes. And I realized that it was a demo do approach three times around and I've got it. So how does that look for me as, you know, as a pilot trainee? You know, I'd show up to pilot training the squadron that morning and they'd say, okay, Murph, we're going to learn to fly the Immelman today. So tonight, I want you to read the book on how to fly the Immelman. Then I want you to sit in a chair in front of your wall in your dorm room with a cockpit, paper cockpit in front of you, and visualize what you read in the book. So the book's going to demo, then you're going to do by chair flying. Throttle's at 83%, pull the nose back to 10 degrees, you know, whatever the book said. So we would do that, demo do. And then the next day I'd show up to the squadron and the IP would say, Murph, did you read? Did you chair fly? Yes, sir, I did. He goes, great. Let's step out to the simulator and I'm going to demonstrate for you. You follow along on the controls, how to fly the Immelman. So he'd demo, then he'd shake the stick and he'd go, okay, Murph, you do. And I would fly demo do in the sim. Sim would land. We'd go out to the jet that afternoon, so to speak. Same thing. Instructor would demo and I would do. Demo do, demo do, demo do. Got it. 16 months later, I'm flying a complex scenario, maybe doing BFM or ACM, combat, air combat. And I don't remember the name of the maneuvers, but here I'm doing them, like rote memory, because of those frameworks that laid down that approach. So that was one framework that I saw. The other one is just standard operating procedures. You know, how do you get a team, an enterprise standardized? And more importantly, how do you get them to be aligned? I mean, after all, we all volunteered to go in the military. We know what the ultimate sacrifice is. Nobody pushed us to do it. We were pulled and compelled somehow. And when we work with companies now and even veterans that are transitioning, you know, when I ask a veteran that's transitioning, I go, well, what do you want to do when you grow up? And they may have an idea. Oh, I want to do something similar. I want to play with guns. I want to play with airplanes. I want to kind of do what I was doing in the military. And then you start asking them a lot of other questions. You can go, well, you know, what is your family? You know, did you promise them you're going to go back to Kansas? You know, and you just said you want to be in banking. You know, there's not a lot of banking in Kansas. I mean, there are pockets of it. But if you want to be at a high level, you know, maybe you're already misaligned there. So unless the veteran has put a lot of thought into what the future looks like, there's very little compelling actions going on. There's a lot of pushing. You should do this. Maybe your spouse saying you should do this. The military saying you should do this when you go to transition training. But until you truly understand what the future looks like in great detail, it's hard to compel and push. So what I do when I'm working with veterans is I get them to pull out a piece of paper and go, let's walk 3 years into the future and tell me what you're doing. Tell me how it feels. You know, what type of money are you making? How much do you have in the bank at that point? What kind of teams are you working with? What compels them? So the more details you can get into that, you know, the clearer it becomes. And then the first, second, and third order steps are crystal clear versus vague.
I love that. It's something in the conversations I've had with vets via the podcast and everything over the years too. I very much often notice that there is a, okay, I was a pilot in the military. I should go be a pilot in the civilian world, right? Like I was an infantryman in the army. I should go be a cop, right? Like we always think it's gotta be that one-to-one transfer. And like, that's the surface level understanding of what I did in the military to the civilian equivalent. Okay. Going those extra 2 to 3 steps of, okay, well, what was it about being an infantryman? What was it about being a pilot? What was it about, you know, serving on a ship that you did enjoy? Okay. I'm sure there were parts you didn't enjoy, but there were probably parts that you did enjoy. For a lot of people, it probably was, you know, being on a team that respected and worked well with each other. It was getting a chance to lead people. Maybe it was, I got to work with some really technical stuff and like that just mentally stimulated me in a way. And I really, really enjoyed that. Oh, okay. Well, that's very separate than maybe all the other crap you had to deal with on the ship or the carrier or whatever it was. Let's dig into that. And like now that then can become your 3-year vision of going after that great life that like you and your family want to get to. So I challenge everyone listening to the show of don't just look at the surface level, dig a couple of layers deeper and think hard about what you enjoyed and how that can intertwine into creating, you know, the life you want after you take off the uniform. That's how I've tried to think about it over the years.
Absolutely. Good advice, Mark.
Yeah. So Jim, I want to dig into a little bit of the starting of Afterburner. Okay. As you know, we see the end state now of, you know, coaching Super Bowl teams and working with, you know, Fortune 50 CEOs and everything, but I'm sure you weren't doing that on day one. So how did you get started in this?
Yeah. So first it started with the idea that, you know, hey, I think these frameworks could apply. Now you have to realize that I had a different perspective than almost any fighter pilot that I knew at that point, because most folks were coming out of the academy or out of ROTC, you know, right into pilot training or OTS. So, and I spent almost 2 years in corporate America. So I had this very unique perspective of what I was going through when I decided to become a fighter pilot and going through that training. That perspective helped me realize there was a massive gap and that these frameworks could help a person outside of the military. You know, a lot of times we think of the things that we do in the military as just breathing steps. We don't even think about them. It's just how we became who we became. But the steps are important and those steps are powerful. So as I had this epiphany at Luke Air Force Base, you know, I vowed over the next 7 years while I was flying to kind of really dive in and start digging into the thesis that I had to see if there's any validity to it. So that came with some testing, that came with going outside of the military and creating a peer group of businessmen that were obviously older than me and accomplished. They gave me a lot of confidence to proceed. They were also my red team, if you will. So, you know, when I started thinking about what my products or services might look like, you know, I would red team them. And then one day I had a really unique opportunity. I was on the weekends flying for this company called Sky Warriors, and we used to fly T-34s and take civilians up dogfighting so they can pretend they're Maverick for the day. And we had lasers in these airplanes and smoke systems. So, you know, you had gun sight in it. And the student or the customer up front could fly and shoot his friend out of the sky and smoke would come out and we'd give him a tape, a video of it. It's really cool. The weather was bad. And the owner of that company said, hey, I've got a group of YPOers coming in to visit and tour Ted Turner and CNN and the Coke facility. And they're going to go flying, but we're weathered out. Can I send this bus of executives over to Dobbins? And can you give them a tour of the F-15? Maybe get them in the sim. And I realized, wow, this is an incredible opportunity. And I had already red teamed a lot of my concepts, including a 1-hour speech or a keynote. So they came over and at the end, I made them sit through my keynote or part of the keynote. And then I said, you know, hey, don't rush the stage, but if you ever need anybody to fly your corporate jet, I'm a pretty good pilot. Or if you need somebody to help you with sales and marketing, I've got a sales and marketing background. But more importantly, what did you think of this speech and this process? So one gentleman came up and offered me a job to run his sales team on a national basis. So I took the job and then went traditional guardsman and then really applied my thesis on that job. And we were able to take that business from $5 million to $52 million in a little less than 24 months, applying these frameworks. So that gave me the absolute confidence then to go out into the free world, if you will, and start Afterburner. So those are the first steps, testing the thesis.
I love that story of sometimes opportunity knocks, and it's not so much, it's the preparation beforehand that you do that enables you to jump when that happens. Of if you had not been thinking about this, working with these mentors, you know, red teaming your idea, kind of getting it ready, this group of executives could have just landed at your lap and they could have had a fun time, you know, touring the F-15, getting some runs in the simulator and everything. And then they said, I had this great day with Jim one day. He showed me around some planes. It was fun. And then just moved on with their life. Right. But the prep there then had you ready of, hey, I've got this golden opportunity. And I mean, realistically, what did you have to lose? Right. I mean, they were captive audience. Their plans for the day were gone and done. You got to, you know, show them some semblance of what they were expecting as a time. But hey, if I get the chance to pitch you right now, then I'm going to do it and see what happens. And I have absolutely nothing to lose there. I love that just view of opportunity.
One other thing to cap that story off is, so I'm working for this company and I knew I was ready to go launch. And I remember I was flying at the guard and I landed and I had just read in the Wall Street Journal. That's another thing that I encourage all veterans to start doing is learning the vernacular of business at that time, I was reading the Wall Street Journal. There are many other things you can do now, but that's what I was doing. And my local big company, Home Depot in Atlanta, Georgia, had announced that they're going to go public and they're going to go from 300 stores to 2,000 stores in a real short amount of time. And I went, wow, there's some dude in the corporate headquarters building or some dudette that's got a real problem on their hands, right? How are they going to scale like that? Because their CEO and their founders just announced on Wall Street they're going to do this. So I drove by the corporate headquarters building. It's right by Dobbins and knocked on the door, actually walked into the lobby and there was a young lady there and I'm still in my flight suit. And I go, hello, ma'am. I said, I'm just here investigating. Who is the person in charge of executive training and leadership here at the Home Depot? And she goes, oh, this is, you know, David. And you know, she gave me his name. And I go, great, can I have his number? This is pre, you know, we can't Google everything, LinkedIn. Can I have his digits? I'd like to set up an appointment with him. And she goes, well, Captain, let me see if I can get him on the phone. Maybe he'll see you right now. And I go, in the back of my mind, I go, gosh, I'm not ready for this, but let's see. So 30 seconds later, I'm on the elevator heading up to the 24th floor and I walk in. And there's a gentleman there. And I said, hello, my name's, you know, Captain Jim Murphy, 116th Fighter Wing. I've got an idea that I've been working on. I read the announcement that Home Depot is going to go public. And I assume that you've got a big problem on your hands. And he's like looking at me, you know, I'm 29 or however old I was. He's going, well, listen, young man, please tell me what my problem is. And I go, well, sir, I've been studying the Home Depot model. You have 200 employees in every store. There's five departments, which means you have five assistant managers and one store manager set up a little bit like a squadron or a wing in the Air Force. And I go, if you're going to go from 300 stores to 2,000 stores, you're going to cannibalize every assistant manager and be woefully short if they all get promoted to run a store. And I go, I don't know how you're going to do that in that short of a time. I go, do you have the processes and the standards set up to scale like that? And he goes, well, how can you help me with that? And I go, well, I come from an organization that routinely does that. We have one of the most diverse workforces on the planet, and we routinely train people. We deploy on a moment's notice halfway across the world, set up an entire mini city. You know, we've got a formula to show you how to do this. And 3 weeks later, I was doing my first gig for Afterburner at Home Depot. And a year later, we were on the front page of that very same Wall Street Journal publication. Group of Fighter Pilots helps the Home Depot become America's most admired retailer. So that really helped our business get started on a good foot.
Oh, man. Just a couple hours ago, there's a veteran I'm coaching and I was emailing him about he's trying to get into this graduate school, and he was nervous about sending this direct communication to someone on the admissions committee. Okay. He's, you know, still in the military, kind of still feeling that hierarchical rank structure and everything. I'm like, listen, man, all that kind of goes away afterwards. Okay. And honestly, I would challenge a lot of people who are still in active, still in uniform, that some of that rank structure, you can probably jump it. You know, don't take Mark's word too much in that one, but don't be scared to just reach out to the top and just walk into the lobby and say, hey, can I talk to this person? Can I go directly and reach out to this executive and get my idea in front of them? Again, you know, I think in your case, I mean, the worst that could happen is they just said no. Okay. No one's going to.
We have a trump card as a veteran. I mean, you know, we're part of the diverse, inclusive universe out there. You know, let's use it. You know, let's use it as a calling card. It'll get us in the front door. Let's go.
Right. Absolutely. It will get you a foot in the front door, and then you got to show and deliver. Okay. That's the follow-up part, but it will get you in the door. So take advantage of that opportunity. I want to go back to, you know, before you were even pitching this group of executives, you kind of landed on your lap, and that early group of mentors that you talked about, your red team, how did you connect with these people? And were you all meeting for coffee? Were they paid coaches? I'm just kind of curious what that relationship looked like.
So you can imagine I was very passionate about flying, right? So my first mentor, when I first joined my unit after all of my training, I'm in a guard unit. So half the guys are airline pilots. They fly for Delta, and they were all driving Porsches and talking about their vacations. And they didn't look like they worked too hard. And they certainly weren't stressed. I'm like, I think I need to do that. I think I need to be an airline pilot. Well, the problem is you need a lot of hours to do that. So I needed to accelerate my hours. And when you fly a fighter, you know, your average flight time is about 1 hour and 5 minutes. So it takes a lot of sorties to get 1,000+ hours. So I thought maybe I'll go buy an airplane. But of course, as a first lieutenant, you know, you can't really afford anything like that. So I started, you know, scouring the periodicals for airplanes for sale. And there was an article in there about a guy was looking for a partner in his airplane. And so I called him up, and he's a businessman. He's a consultant. He's an author. He's done a lot of really cool stuff. And he thought I was kind of cool because I walked up after I left the squadron. I'm in my flight suit. I fly the F-15. I'm this young guy. And so we start becoming friends. I became a partner in the airplane, and I started watching what he was doing. And I had told him about my idea, and he really helped cultivate that for me because he was a very, very similar industry. So he gave me a lot of confidence. And then there was another gentleman up in Louisville, Kentucky that I had met when I flew in an air show up there. Super successful entrepreneur. And he kind of set up an informal group of executives up there that became my red team as well. But I was very purposeful about that one. The first one, you know, was just through, you know, association and through life. But at the air show, I met some people that were prominent business people in the community up there. And of course, I was front and center. So I had an opportunity to make those connections. So that is when I purposely went out and said, hey, I've got this idea, I'm formulating it. You know, I'd love to come up and show you what we're doing and have you punch holes in it. And yeah. So that started.
And I'm going to make an assumption here to kind of lead into an idea a little bit for the audience, but kind of going back to this, what we talked about a couple of minutes ago of being comfortable, maybe going above your perceived rank here a bit. Okay. I guarantee you right now for everyone listening, like there are people who want to help you out. Okay. There are people who are 20, 30 years ahead of you in your career who would love to mentor you in some capacity. Okay. But mentorship, like any relationship, is a two-way street. They would love to, provide some insight, some guidance to you. But I'm sure this group of people looked at you and they said, you know, every time Jim comes to us, he's prepared. He's got this great idea. He keeps developing whatever advice, insight they were giving you. I'm assuming you're probably actioning on in some type of way. So they're saying like, oh, he's both hungry. He's listening to our advice. Like I'm getting something out of this because I'm getting to see, you know, the development of this young entrepreneur. And that excites me. You know, they're not asking you for consulting fees or, you know, seats on your board or something yet. It's just that natural human goodwill to want to see other people succeed.
You know, that is the secret sauce, and that can be your secret sauce. When I showed up to those meetings, you know, I had already researched each one of the executives, found out what they like to do, what they were doing from a business perspective. I even asked them what some of their biggest challenges were so I could then roll that into what I was providing when I was demonstrating some of our services. So that preparation is absolutely key. And so is the follow-up thank yous as well. So that stickiness is what you call it in sales, is really, really important.
So give us a sense of, I want to fast forward. I like to go back and forth in time here. So, you know, we talked about time with these mentors. I want people to maybe get a sense of like what your days look like now. Can you give us a sense of what day to day looks like? And I know, you know, not every day is going to be the same. Maybe like what the flow of a week might look like for you.
It's pretty calm right now because I'm in between a few things. Mm-hmm. So, you know, we now have a CEO at Afterburner, which is the management training and consulting mm-hmm. firm you've been referencing, who's doing a great job. Oddly enough, he's Australian, flew in the Royal Australian Air Force, and a great guy, great fighter pilot. So my time dedicated to that is really more of a chairman and a board role. The private equity business is where I'm spending most of my time right now. Some of it I can't even talk about, but some of it I will. So, you know, we've invested in as a minority investor, as an independent sponsor, in some investments where I'm not very involved at all. You know, I sit on the board on a few of those, but then there's another organically a startup in healthcare. And I exited a healthcare business back in 2019 that I started in 2010, a home healthcare business. And this is a behavioral healthcare business. So we've done all the activities that you need to do to start a business. So, you know, we've done our research. We put together our team. We put in seed capital. We're now past break even. So we've done the compliance and all the things that you need to do. So now we're scaling, and that requires a little more time. So, you know, I spent a little bit of time there. The business is based in Phoenix right now. It'll eventually be a national business, but our CEO's in Phoenix. And then I'm also working on something that is in the aerospace and defense world, and it's causing me to fly around and look at different manufacturing facilities, because our thesis is the silver tsunami, the baby boomers are retiring in middle America and leaving great opportunities. I know, Mark, you're very familiar with this story, and this is a great opportunity for veterans. But manufacturing, as you know, if we all look at what we think is going to happen with China and the other things that we're dealing with in the military, if you look at a logistical sustained campaign that may or may not happen to us in the future, that manufacturing base is going to be critical. And it's very weak right now in the United States. So part of our thesis is investing in areas that addresses a specific supply chain around defense and aerospace. So I'm running around visiting a lot of slightly larger than mom and pops. We call them SMB, small to medium sized businesses around the country, and looking at opportunities, turnaround opportunities in manufacturing plants.
Awesome. Yeah, I'm amidst the throes of trying to finalize a deal. My first small business acquisition myself here. Hopefully closing. Yeah, hopefully closing here in the next month and a half.
Good luck.
Thank you. Can you talk a little bit about how you view, so you've got this, you know, tremendous consulting firm, okay, and now this private equity fund. Do you view those two as, you know, separate entities, or are they, I mean, structurally, I understand they're probably separate entities, but are they synergistic in any way? Do they complement one another?
They absolutely do. And we originally set it up to be very connected, but now we've very purposely disconnected it. But yeah, there's a ton of synergies. I mean, you know, part of our thesis on Afterburner Capital is eventually when we build up our portfolio companies, there are going to be lots of opportunities to bring veterans that we know that have certain skill sets that we're connected with, maybe over on the consulting side of the world, and bring them right into the C-suite or the EVP suite. And they may not have specific industrial knowledge or intellectual capital that would apply to that business or vertical, but they're veterans. So I know all the frameworks we talked about, they're well-versed in. And then they know our model at Afterburner, which is flawless execution. And having applied that to companies in every segment over the last 27 years, I know it's magic in a bottle. So if we apply it and hold an enterprise accountable to it, we're going to get a great result. So there's certainly the synergies there, the intellectual capital we use at Afterburner, and the people and the relationships that we've met there. But they are definitely separate entities.
Yeah. No, I mean, it's always interesting to see how, okay, I start this one business, right? And then you go through the throes of building it and maintaining it. And now you're, you know, kind of removed from the day-to-day operations. And then, oh, great. Like, and I now see how this other business can kind of sprout from that. And even if they're not, you know, directly working together in some way, it's the experience and the experience gained from one then bleeds into the other. I'm sure there are maybe some shared connections that also help. I share that story to just think that, you know, the growth of a business and the growth of like a business career is not a linear, straightforward step. It's very interwoven with people and other and people relationships and other businesses and how they all kind of connect with each other. And I think, you know, what you've built around you right now is kind of a very good testament to understanding and seeing that possibility of the network effect of both people and business.
Yeah. And if you think about it, you know, as a fighter pilot, as veterans, we're trained a lot to look at threats and resources, and we're future-based planners, right? So we look at second, third order effects. We look at, you know, influencing centers of gravity, critical leverage points. I mean, all these things we learned apply in business in a big way. But for us, you know, we're looking at, you know, spending our time in healthcare and aerospace and defense, specifically around certain manufacturing segments. And you know, we pick those areas for very specific reasons. We see the trends, we see the future demands. And, you know, luckily I've had 27 years of experience running around looking at all these other big giant companies, and I've seen what works and what doesn't work, but I've also seen where our skill sets really apply. So if you're a veteran and you're looking at becoming an entrepreneur and you're not sure what industry or segment that you want to go into, I mean, you know, I love to hunt and fish, and I know a lot of probably veterans do as well. So, you know, automatically I'd love to do something in hunting and fishing, but when I really look at where what we do applies, I look for places that are kind of a mess operationally, that with simple frameworks, we can clean up that mess and streamline it. And when you do that, that drops money to the EBITDA or the bottom line, the net revenue. So for me, healthcare is a perfect place for that because the way that people execute healthcare is a mess. And the way it gets paid, the way it gets reimbursed, the way it gets executed, you know, there's a lot of ambiguity around healthcare. So that's an area that we saw, you know, to clean that up operationally, that could bring great value to us.
I've always been nervous at looking at any type of healthcare related business precisely for that reason of it's a mess of a process. It's not, you know, there's regulations and everything, and especially as someone who has, you know, zero experience in healthcare other than on the patient end, it can be really hard to look at that and say, yep, sure, I want to dive headfirst into that regulatory nightmare.
Mark, I love that. I love where we're going with this because I didn't know a thing about healthcare.
Yeah.
And I remember one of my original mentors back in Louisville, Kentucky, this guy named Charles Osborne. He had a bunch of warbirds, a wealthy man up there. He's the healthcare guy. And one day he grabbed me and he goes, you know, Murph, if I was you, I'd spend my time in healthcare. And I remember looking at it and going, golly, that guy must be crazy. That's the last place I want to spend my time. And 20 years later, when I really looked at things, it still scared me to death. But I said, you know what? I'm going to go for it because I may not understand it, but I do understand the simplicity of certain frameworks that can clean that up. And I can learn it. And, you know, I can also potentially find people to help me learn it or find people with that expertise. You know, you always want to surround yourself with people that are way smarter than you. So they're out there, right? But don't underscore what you bring to the table because your perspective is going to be very unique compared to theirs. And, you know, that can be very powerful.
You know what? That's a great perspective to bring to it. And I think there's something in identifying opportunities where, just as I mentioned, because maybe the regulatory compliance, the mess of the system and everything, that can be the barrier to entry, the moat around your business of, okay, this was a challenge to get into, but because there is a challenge to get into it, it's going to stop other people from getting into it. And that builds kind of my defense around the business because I'm willing to dive headfirst into this complex problem with the right people and then build something up around that. So I like that reframing.
Yeah, I mean, you think about any kind of military conflict, you know, when you first go in, you have this perfect strategy and plan and then bullets start flying and then it becomes a series of iterations, you know, who can debrief the quickest, get knowledge to the front lines, you know, be agile and fleet, but you don't really know until you get in it. And that's the same way about these businesses. But because you have a strong framework, you probably have a lot of confidence in what you can do. Don't be afraid to get in there and get your nose bloody. I mean, you know, you can't really learn until you get to the pace of change in the environment itself.
Mm, Yeah, no, I like that a lot. I really do. Well, Jim, we're winding down to the last few minutes here. Now I want to leave a couple minutes for close out and some thoughts and conversation with you. So, but before we get to that, there's a question I always ask my guests. Okay. So if you think back to your time in the Air Force, what was the best and or worst chow hall you ever ate at?
You know, in the Air Force, you know, we always had great chow, great golf, you know, very comfortable sleeping quarters. Now, I was in the Guard, so I was home most of the time. So mm-hmm. I would say the worst, though, was we deployed to Turkey, you know, living in Tent City. And, you know, as a fighter pilot, you know, we don't eat a lot of MREs, but we had a problem with the chow hall. And, you know, we had to spend some time, you know, eating chow hall food and the MRE. So that was probably that worst experience. But, you know, most of the places that we landed our F-15 Air Force bases weren't too bad.
Yeah. Yeah. When you have a chow hall that's staring at you and you still have to eat an MRE,
you can eat. It's not bad.
Yeah.
I felt pretty fortunate. And, you know, every day I was in, I was pinching myself because I couldn't believe how lucky I was. So I, you know, even probably the bad food tasted pretty good at that point.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, Jim, it's been I really appreciate your time and your willingness to come on the show and talk to the audience and everything. And, you know, I think having you as a guest and kind of talking a bit about the transition in particular is fantastic because, you know, you had this successful career post-military, but you also work with a lot of veterans, both in the, you know, through their own transition, but even within your own company, there's a lot of veterans who come through. So I'm sure you kind of get to see their growth from, you know, taking off the uniform to, you know, their business career afterwards. So I just want to give you an opportunity for any parting shots, words of wisdom, thought, parting shots for the crowd of, you know, how to think about post-military life and going through that transition process.
First of all, you should be excited because right now we have a leadership issue in the United States. I'm not just talking about business. I'm talking about period. And no matter what military branch you came from, you have formalized training around the wingman concept, esprit de corps, around alignment, but more importantly, around leading and holding each other accountable, including yourself. And there's very little of that going around. So if you can take that rigor and just move it right into the next step, you are going to be uberly successful. And don't be afraid to talk about what makes you really good as a military veteran, your leadership, organization, teamwork, communication, discipline, experience, and knowledge around things that people may not have any clue on. There's power in that, but it's really the way you warehouse it and then sell it, because ultimately you have to sell what you've done, and transitioning it into civilian speak is one step. And I know you're getting some, y'all are all getting training on that, but, you know, roll your shoulders back and be confident. Go out there and grab it. There are very few people on the planet that have your perspective. So it's powerful. Another thing is, one of my friends and I wrote a book called Downrange. You can still get it, Wiley. We wrote it just for you, for transitioning military professionals. So if you're in a transition, I'd highly encourage you to go get a copy of that. You can get it online at Amazon. And there's some step-by-step protocols in there, frameworks that are great for you to sit down with your significant other, map out what that future looks like, back into your skill sets, your wants, your desires, your needs. And that'll inform your first, second, and third order effects a lot better. So I'd highly encourage you to go out and grab that. Will Duke is my buddy that co-wrote that book with me, but it's called Downrange, still available.
Awesome. And a couple of points you brought up there are ones that I experienced firsthand in working with people all the time of we as a community just love to undersell ourselves and not want to say what it is that we really did. Okay. Of this is accomplishment that I did, right? Because military service, you know, we tend to, for a very good reason, I think, want to encourage people to take that stance of humility. Right. But we all kind of have to get over that hump in order to be able to achieve what it is that we want to do post-military. And it's not a selfish thing. It's not a bragging thing. It's not an egotistical thing. It's a thing to help you get to a place where then you can influence positive outcomes is the way I try to think about it.
Go beyond what you put on the resume. I mean, you know, I was in charge of this much logistics that equated to this much dollars for this much budget. I mean, we put all those great things in a resume, but the soft skills are what people are looking for. I mean, your ability to communicate in tough environments, deliver tough news, you know, leading in a certain situation where, which required a lot of, I mean, the military were under a lot of pressure in how we lead, the same way with corporate America. So there's just so many things that you can bring to the table. So don't be afraid to dig into those soft skills, what made you great as well. One last thing, if you want to communicate with me as well, I've got a friend, Patrick Bet David. He just launched an app called Minnect, M-I-N-N-E-C-T. It has a lot of great thought leaders on there. It's a treasure trove of a device. I'm on there as well. So you can Google my name, James Murphy, on there, and we can connect. But there's some great business leaders and entrepreneurs on that app as well that can help out.
Yeah, he's a tremendous story for anyone who's never known his story. Awesome, awesome guy to look into. Well, Jim, really appreciate you coming on. This was a fantastic conversation. A lot of good stuff in here for everyone who's listening to dig into. So I really appreciate your time today. For everyone still listening, please like, subscribe, leave a review, and I'll see you all next week. Take care.